Hey, Tara Strong here, and you're listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Hello, and welcome to episode 207 of The Cinema Geeks. I am one of your Cinema Geeks, Optimus Solo, and joining me, as usual, is the Comic Concierge. Dan, how are you doing?
Good, good. How about yourself?
Doing wonderful. Ready to tackle some more Alfred Hitchcock as we are getting our way through this Alfred Hitchcock retrospective. We're on our third film now, so I feel like we're just like getting into the weeds now. Like, first couple out of the way, 3 out of 10, like we're in it now. So what were your thoughts for everybody that's not I'm gonna edit that out. So the third film that we are covering, as we mentioned in our last episode, is going to be the 1948 American psychological crime thriller Rope. So Dan, what was your experience? I know you said it on last episode, but those that didn't tune into that one, what's your experience with Rope before you watched it this time?
So this was my first time watching this. I thought maybe I've seen it before, but going through it, I clearly have not, because I didn't remember anything. So it was a brand new watch for me.
It's my first time watch as well. This is based on a 1929 play of the same title, which is possibly inspired by real life events. This is starring the likes of Jimmy Stewart, John Dahl, Farley Granger, Joan Chandler, Douglas Dick, and a few other people. Jimmy Stewart's obviously probably one of the main stars that people will recognize from this one. And this is kind of a noir type film here, where we get introduced to an act right off the bat, and then the rest of it is somewhat supposed to be, I guess, suspenseful as to how the rest of the events are going to transpire. It's also known for its experimental techniques, I guess, from a filming standpoint. It's supposedly, I guess, as best they can, to try to be done in real time. So the amount of time that you spend with them on the movie is about pretty close to the amount of time that is actually taking place over the course of the movie. And then there's also the fact that it's supposedly, like, I think it's 10, but they say it's kind of like 4 long sequences where you're following the camera around the rooms and things of that nature. So it's got some techniques that had never been done before on this type of stage. So what was your first impression of Rope after seeing it?
It was interesting because, yeah, like you said, like it opens up on a murder. It basically, you hear a scream, and then you're just like, wait, what just happened? Because it's like, did, and then trying to like determine what exactly was the motivation there. And it was murder for the sake of murder. Like that, they just wanted the excitement of it, which was not what I expected at all. I'm like, oh, wow, this is pretty macabre. This is pretty sadistic in a way. Like, these people just, it's the perfect crime. It's interesting. Like, it wasn't what I was expecting. Like, you can definitely tell this is a play, because I think this probably would work really well on stage, because, as you mentioned, it's done in real time. It's a lot of like just straight dialogue. I do think Hitchcock, as you mentioned, does his best with using the camera to try to go around and like make it feel like you're not just looking at a stage, that you're part of the room, to give you an understanding of like the landscape of everything, which is important. But I was intrigued by it, but I guess compared to what we went before, I had trouble connecting with it compared to what we previously watched. I think potentially because I was so caught up in the machinations, the creation of it within itself. I think it's well made, but in a way, I feel like you mentioned, like it's feels like it's done, or the trick here, it's like one continuous shot, or it's clearly not that. And I think every time that would happen, because you would have someone walk by the camera, it would zoom in and then zoom out and like, continue. And clearly that was where a cut was. And I think that every time that happened, it kind of took me out a little bit. So I was impressed with the craftsmanship of the movie, but I wasn't as like emotionally invested in this, or like the plight of what was occurring. I felt like for something that should be super thrilling, I didn't have that tension I thought I might.
So interesting. I'm kind of intrigued on your take as well, because I didn't know if we were going to line up together or if we were going to be at odds on this one. And by at odds, I mean just like having different takes on it. And this was one that I've always wanted to watch. Like, this has always been on like one of my top films, like on my bucket list of like ones blind spots that I need to watch. I don't know why, but like I was always wanting to watch this one. And then we started with the 39 Steps and Notorious, and I was like, oh, like this is going to be like a great ride. This is going to be like a Tarantino retrospective where just every film is just like getting knocked out of the park or like increasingly like better and better. And so like perhaps I got my anticipation too high, or my hopes too high, or I don't know what it was, but this film did not work for me in a lot of ways. I guess I do agree with you that it does 100% come off as something that was based on a play. Like if you ever go to the live theater and you're seeing anything in like the murder mystery / suspense genre, it plays just like this. It seems like you can see this type of thing where we're all in like the same room or like couple rooms where it's a very limited cast, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like you can definitely tell you're dealing with that type of thing. And I do think, you know, I guess there is some props to give, because I guess they had like a lot of the walls and different things were like on rolling structures, so that as they move from one room to another, they could pull back a wall so the cameras could get through with no interruption. And then the camera would, you know, go back and the wall would come back. So there was a lot of stuff going on from that. And I guess, you know, from a, what I was reading is from a care, like the actor standpoint, there was a lot of choreography that had to happen to make this all work, whether it be avoiding stepping on cords or, you know, like I said, walls changing places and you got to be aware of that, or trying to make sure sense stuff is moving back and forth, that when the camera's coming back, that it's all how it was before. And I don't know if that like somehow translates into the performances or it just translates into the overall effect of the movie. But I feel like it took me out of the movie time and time again, to where I just wasn't invested. Like what I really was not anticipating and enjoyed on the 39 Steps and Notorious was that they both had me from go. Like they hooked me like within the first, say, 5, maybe 10 minutes. Like I think the first 5 minutes of both of those films, I was like, I'm ready for this. Like I'm into this. I'm watching the whole thing. And this one definitely did not do that. Like we start with, obviously, like you say, like there's a murder immediately. And it was kind of like, I don't know, it took me aback a little bit about how they were setting the stage for this. And so I wasn't invested right away. And I found myself wanting to be and trying to be, and they just never did. Like throughout the entire, I think this is like what, an hour and 20 minutes. Like I never got hooked the entire time. And we'll dig into a little bit more of like why that may be as well. Before I go back to you though, I wanted to bring up the fact that it seems, I guess, that both of us are a little bit more in line with like the contemporary reviews that happened when this movie came out, which is not usually the case always. Like sometimes stuff gets reviewed in the moment and then over time, like completely changed. But the contemporary reviews were not necessarily overwhelmingly positive for this film. Even some of the people involved with this film, Hitchcock and Jimmy Stewart, both in some ways have alluded to the fact that they weren't huge fans of this film. And then it seems though, like as time has passed, it's gotten this like really overwhelmingly positive, I guess, critique, because it's got like a 93-95% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I was looking at like Letterboxd at to like a lot of the people in our film circles, or, you know, film Twitter or whatever, you know, people we've met and along the way when we've done this podcast, and they're almost overwhelmingly positive. And I'm trying to figure out like what I missed or like why it doesn't work for me. And we'll get into that as we kind of continue through this discussion. But what's your take on kind of like the reception that this film had originally and then how it's evolved over time?
Yeah, I guess after looking at like its contemporary reviews, I think a lot of people took issue with the fact that, you know, it was people almost celebrating murder. Like these main characters, their drive is like they wanted to commit the ultimate murder. And I think that turned some people away, because, and I also think at that time, Hitchcock was never really a huge favorite for a lot of critics because he dealt with a lot of like taboo subjects. So, and this was dealing with that to an nth degree. Plus, as mentioned, it was different because it did feel like a play. It was a lot of, and he moves the camera around a lot. And I think for a lot of people that was maybe too much. I think on a technical level, like I said, it's well made, and it's even like the map they use for, like, because you know it's in like an apartment, and you see the background of New York City, or I believe it's New York City, like in the use of lighting, especially near like the climax of the film, all great. I think that like that's all well done. So, and I think that probably is something that a lot of people appreciate, and I do. Like, I appreciate that aspect of it. I guess, like, for me, it just, I struggled with, like you said, connecting with anything that was here. It was this, obviously, cat and mouse game, which they call out, and I guess I didn't really care if the mouse caught the cat.
Cause that's like, what my problem was.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I just want them all to fail. not that, like, likability isn't, like, a requirement, but I think, I don't know. It almost felt like, I wouldn't say anti-intellectual, but it felt like certainly Hitchcock, obviously this isn't his original creation, but it felt like it was almost, it didn't seem like a critique of that, like those intellectual, you know, those college circles, those type of individuals who have this kind of high and mighty type of, aura about them. Mm-hmm. And, but in reality, like they lack kind of the basic morality of humanity, because they don't see people as equals, kind of showing the dichotomy of that. I think, again, like those pieces I did, it just like, I don't know, I just, like you said, it's only 120 minutes, it doesn't waste any time, but I, at the end of the day, I was just like, I don't know what I'm supposed to, beyond just the watching it technical. All take place. Yeah, just it was just events happening. I didn't feel like a story was being told per se.
And I've long time been a fan of like the theater, and I've been involved, and I've gone, like, I've had different, you know, subscriptions, like annual, like, I don't know, season ticket holder or whatever, to like different things. So I've seen a number of these on the stage, and I think what always has worked for me in those types of thriller, suspense, in a way mystery plays, is a couple different things. Number one is that the thrilling aspect, or the suspense aspect, or the mystery aspect, like, I was vested in, as far as like I cared how it resolved itself, number one. And I didn't hear, like, I didn't care if they were caught or not caught in this at all. Like, I was never vested in that. And then I think the other thing that a lot of those films do, or plays do well, is in the journey of going through that suspense, a lot of them go one way or the other. One way they tend to go is a comedic route, where there's lots of funny aspects as we make our way through that. And the other side of that coin is they have these intellectual or thought-provoking, provocative conversations, discussions that make you think with clever dialogue, clever thought processes, and things like that. And for me, this film did neither of those things. So not only am I not caring about the resolution of the suspense, but I'm not necessarily entertained in the journey as we go from one to the other. And like, half of me thinks, like, I would have rather them started talking about the fact that they had killed their classmate, or talking about the idea of it without showing us that they had actually done it. And like building in suspense on, did they really do this? Is he really in this scene the entire time? Like, maybe something like that, where I don't know that it's already happened, might have helped. But I don't know, like, from a character standpoint, like, the main two guys, which is their characters' names are Brandon and Philip, I found neither one of them likable. I didn't find either one of them somebody that drew me in, that I cared about. Like, obviously Brandon comes across as he's supposed to, I get it, but he comes across as kind of a despicable human being, right? And Philip's not quite as bad, but like, neither one of them has me, like, they're not like commanding presence on the stage or in the film in this standpoint that's like there's no shh. Like, we just watched a movie with Cary Grant. Like, they don't have that. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that it was intended for them to have that. Obviously, they have Jimmy Stewart playing a different character, and that's kind of where they were going for that. But, like, these other films that we talked about, 39 Steps, Notorious, like, there was a lot of side characters, especially in 39 Steps, a lot of side characters that I cared about or that were entertaining or funny or that I enjoyed. I don't care about the dad in this one. I don't care about the sister-in-law, which to me is just weird that that's the other person involved in here. And I didn't care about this foursome of classmates. Like, the Janet character somewhat works for me. Like, I found her intriguing, and the fact that she's dated a couple of these guys and she comes across a little bit more magnetic, a little bit more interesting, at least to me. And maybe Mrs. Wilson, who I guess is a maid. I don't know if it's 100% defined, but she's basically taking care of the house and fixing the dinner and stuff like that. Like, those two females, I think, did more for me than any of the other characters in this film. Did any of the characters really work for you?
I'll say I did like the performance of my goodness, I can't think of
Brandon or Philip.
Yeah, Philip and Brandon. I thought like Philip was like, in the sense of like, he was a good villain. Like, I thought he did. He was smarmy. The way he reveled like in what was happening, like he was good at, like, you could, like, you know, twisting the knife. Like, he felt mm-hmm. like, it's going to be a weird comparison, but like one of those reality TV show characters where like they're clearly brought on because they know how to create drama, and he definitely felt like that type of personality.
Right.
So I thought that. In that sense of his ability to create drama, or like, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
if I'm a director, though, like, I don't know. Like, if I watch this film, I don't know if I'm ever calling these two guys as agent and like casting them in my film. Maybe I'm being harsh.
I don't know. I didn't have an issue with their performance. I thought their performances were fine. Like, I thought, you know, Brandon was maybe a little bit much, like his, and a little bit also inconsistent. And I felt at times where it was very, you know, when you get to the end and it became a bit redundant, I think, in the last act, which is really maybe what soured me, because we have this climax of the cat and mouse game. It seems like he basically admits that they killed him, but then they also step back and say, like, you know, just trying to really like call his bluff or not. And it felt like we were that last 10 minutes, just kind of circling the drain in a way, where it was like, just get to it. Like, I get, like, you're just back, like the back and forth, it just felt like, you know, it's just more annoying than like intense, which was probably why, like, I liked it on a technical level, but in the sense of like the suspense, it wasn't there. Maybe because we're going off two movies which were super suspenseful compared to what I felt here. But yeah, I do feel like the, you know, the parents, the one mom who was really, really into horoscopes and things like that, they were,
but it's like, not even the mom, isn't it introduced as like, she's the aunt, like she's this, she's the sister-in-law or something like that. Like, I'm like, what are we doing here? Like,
I was like trying to figure out the dynamic with the, like you said, with Mrs. Wilson. I thought the place was her place, which really,
right,
like, so that's that, I mean, that's not important, but I just felt like, wait, is it his look? I wasn't sure who was who, but like, it kind of makes sense through the end, but like, I guess, like, in the sense of the characters, like, I didn't think they were badly performed. I just felt that I got it, like, it just felt like a lot of, like, it felt like even though this is like 80 minutes, it was a lot of repetition, a lot of just like going through the same. And you know, sometimes
it's probably not as much the actors' faults either. I think, like, I don't think they're given a lot of like great stuff to chew on. You know what I mean? Like, even Jimmy Stewart, who's amazing. This isn't one of his best roles, right? Like, this is like,
his character confused me the most out of all of them. Like, because there's a conversation that's surrounding murder and like, and basically how they're kind of both for it in a way. But then at the end, he has this like aha moment where, you know, he's like, well, this isn't really what I was. And it felt very, it did, to me, it didn't ring true because I,
right.
It seems like, oh, you're twisting my words. And I'm like, not really. They didn't really twist the words. They kind of just did what you said. That's right. Exactly what you said. So it felt in a way like this character is supposed to have like, he's supposed to be the, you know, the hero per se. Like, oh, look at him. Like he's putting them in their place. But I'm like, he's kind of just as, he seems like he's more upset that they did it and he did it. Like,
in a right, way, I don't right.
know. Like that's what like Trump, like his character felt like. That conversation around murder is where it started souring me a bit because it just like, wait, why? Like what it felt very, what they were trying to say. And I like, that's where I thought like, is this Hitchcock just basically kind of casting dispersions against like the intellectual elite or intellectual or elite, you know, that type of, many of which tend to look down on his work. So I thought maybe that was part of it. Also, there's definitely like, definitely saying that Philip and Brandon are gay, right? Without saying it, like that seems like very.
So, yeah, I read into that a little bit. The play, it's blatant in the play that it's based on. It's blatant, and it's also in the play. Jimmy Stewart's character is older and has had a relationship with one of the boys at some point. Like, and it's definitely much more like out there. I think they were, because this is 1948. I think they were not.
Yeah,
they not saying it, but they're not saying it.
It's certainly, you know, coded. I mean? It's certainly coded that way because, you know, just in the performance, like, you know, they're going on vacation. It definitely felt, you know, as close as you can get to for that time, which also kind of just maybe soured me a bit because it's almost like, is this what you're saying? Like, you know, people, you know, gay people are like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if that's taking it too far, but it felt, I don't know. That might be.
I also feel like they had opportunities there. Like, because there's so much dialogue, like as you brought up like this whole conversation about murder. And like, I was, when that starts, like that whole sequence starts, I'm like, oh, we're about to get some of this, like more clever, provocative, like a conversation where at first you think you're going to be like easily on one side. And like through the conversation, you're starting to see like both sides type, like that type of like, discourse where you're like, oh wait a second, like he makes a couple good points, but like it didn't do that. It was just like it's good to murder folks, and I'm like, I can't go there. I'm sorry. Like I don't know, like that was a little tough for me as well.
It's a movie that's built on dialogue. That's, you know, that's where, you know, you're all in one room. It's all about conversation, and I think in order to do that, you need to have really strong captivating conversation and performances behind it. And I thought like we didn't really like the performances, like I said, weren't bad. I thought at times they had moments, but nothing nothing about any of the characters here I felt super compelled by, or like the any dialogue sequences where I felt were, even like when we got to the, you know, where we're eventually getting to, like this cat and mouse game, I didn't feel like there was much of a cat and mouse game. It was just like, oh, he found the hat, you know, and like that was, that kind of clued him in. And like, you know, you see the gears, you know, the little clues adding up. But I thought even it, the middle section for the majority of that dinner, you know, I felt like it should have been more suspenseful than it was. Like I didn't ever feel any sense of danger or any sense of like, they're close to like, oh, there's a body in the room. And
it should be built in right there. Like, I don't.
Yeah. So it just, I get, maybe like you said, maybe it was just cause it, I've heard like you have heard so much great things, people loving this movie, and which is great. I mean, maybe if I saw it again, I would enjoy it more. I don't know. And like I said, I think technically like the ability to use location and, you know, the construction of that location, all great, but I just felt like I could tell this was all, I didn't feel like the one long shot didn't movies any favor. And like I mentioned, the big thing is like every time it was, you know, we saw that break in action when it was clearly like ending one shot and going to the next, every time that happened, any tension that was being built kind of just got deflated because it just reminded me of watching a movie, and it became aware of the filmmaking, which I think is, you know, to me, like for a one shot, or for, it shouldn't take you out of it. And again, it's just my experience with it, it did. So that's that was more my bigger issue than necessarily the performances.
When you have a film that starts off with a murder that we see on screen, and then you have two guys that are going to be as bold and audacious to like put the body in a piece of furniture and then have a party with a bunch of people around it, and I'm more fascinated or interested in figuring out like the dynamics between Janet and the guys that she's involved with, like that's problematic. Like when I stop immediately caring about the main crux of this film, like I don't know, like it doesn't seem like it's doing it a good thing. But yeah, like it just did not work for me overall, especially as it went towards the end.
If compared to this, like The Lifeboat, which is another Hitchcock film all taking place, you know, on a lifeboat, I love that. Like that's a movie I do love. And
this is right up my alley. Like this is the type of film I like. Like I like a limited cast. I like, you know, very limited set, like one location, two locations, something like that. Like a movie built around dialogue. Like all of these things check all my boxes. And I don't know.
I feel like it makes me want to like, let's add Lifeboat to it and compare it, because I'd be interested to see if that works better for you. Because I it's been actually checked Letterboxd. Like, when did I watch Lifeboat last? It was 10 years ago. It was 11 years ago. But when I watched it 11 years ago, I loved it. So, again, I think maybe it was perhaps building up too much. But like, I didn't hate the movie. I didn't walk away like angry or like thinking. It was just. You know, the power of expectations, it just wasn't to me.
Yeah,
compared to what we've
more of gotten, a head scratcher. It wasn't something that got you angry. It's more of like a head scratcher, like what did everybody else see that I missed, type thing.
Yeah, it's like I would wish I enjoyed it more. That was like a thing. It was more disappointing because it's like I wanted to like this more and I didn't. And you know, it's especially with a suspense film, it's hard to go back and try watch it again, because if it didn't work for the first time, I don't see the suspense probably won't come the second time. So
right, a couple of interesting things as well. Well, before I get to that, I do find it interesting that as meticulous as they're clearly trying to be about the choreography, about who's standing where, about where the furniture needs to be, and this, that, and the other, there was just like some blatant. And I know this isn't like big. This is more nitpicky stuff, but there's like some blatant things that you notice as you're watching. That's like, did nobody pick up on the fact that, for example, the guy breaks a glass on his hand, is bleeding all over the place, and like seconds later his hand has no sign of a scratch, no bandage, no anything. And then they do a close-up of his hands.
Okay, I thought I was confused by that. I'm like, oh, maybe he didn't scratch it that bad. I was a little confused. I'm like, wait, he has his hand, and then that was a little bit confusing, because it was like, I thought that was gonna be coming into play more. Like it's like, oh, he got bled someplace, but it just is one of those things where you cut yourself with glass, and especially in the hand, it doesn't, you know, it takes a while. But yeah, that was a little weird. It was like, okay, I'm fine now.
It just seemed a little weird. There was the rope that was clearly all the way in the piece of furniture, and then it was like almost all the way out. Like there was just little things that I'm like, okay, I guess I'll just like carry on. Like, it's not important. Just keep going with it. But how about a couple interesting trivia pieces? The first of all, the guy that gets strangled at the beginning and screams. I've never heard someone getting strangled be able to scream. So that's interesting. But I know you have to do it for the effect of the movie. But that was his last film role.
Oh, jeez.
He
did seem old. Like, we only see him for a brief second. And like, he seemed like he was bald, and like he didn't seem like a young person, which also confused. Like, it was like, wait, and he's their classmate, and then that doesn't make sense because he looks so much older than them.
Like, that's just a crazy thing. Like, hey, my last role was I was killed in the first 5 minutes of this film, and that was how I went out, my swan song in Hollywood. It was also the last film role for the girl that played Janet, Joan Chandler. I think she only appeared in like 3 films total, which I was kind of surprised about because I thought she did have a little bit of.
Yeah,
the it factor, but I thought that she was at least a little bit dynamic on camera, and I looked her up because I was like, oh, what else did she do that I might find interesting? And it was like 2 films before this, and that was it.
Maybe she did more Broadway and stuff like that. TV,
possibly. Couple other, obviously, we talked about this a little bit. I think at the end of last episode, this is the first Technicolor film for both Hitchcock and Jimmy Stewart, I believe, if I read what I read correctly. There was a kind of a neat caveat, or like I guess moment in this one, since we're going through a filmography. I don't know why I'm thinking, what the heck do they call those things? Easter eggs. Yes, Easter egg. A little Easter egg for us, because they're talking about other films at one point, and the lady, the mother-in-law or whatever, and this was a couple of good moments by that Joan Chandler, the Janet character, because the way she's smiling and kind of laughing off and playing along with like this crazy lady that's all about her astrological signs and trying to remember movies that she just can only describe as something, someone, and, you know, just vague words. But they're clearly talking about Notorious at one point, which is kind of interesting, because they've mentioned Cary Grant, Ingrid Bergman, and stuff like that. So I thought that was kind of an interesting little nod to one of his previous films, which just happens to be the last one we watched, which was cool.
But they were also trying to reference something that Jimmy Stewart did too. Like, I thought there was something I was trying to figure out what they were referencing, but I couldn't figure
out. There was a couple of those. And just to kind of go back to what I was talking about with both Hitchcock and Stewart. So found one quote from Jimmy Stewart that said, quote, "The really important thing being rehearsed here is the camera, not the actors." And then he said, "It was worth trying. Nobody but Hitch would have tried it, but it really didn't work." And then Hitchcock basically said that the reason he did all of the long takes and that was basically because he was trying to build the framework of a stage play and trying to keep the actors like present and alive within the scene like a play. So those are all things we kind of picked up on as well. Any like tidbits or other things that you picked up on the film that you haven't brought out yet?
No, only thing that we talked about briefly was the, you know, the matting that they use in the background to kind of show the landscape of New York. I loved how, like, you know, it was clearly like a painting, but they also clearly had like vents or something like that, like to like show where it's like smoke was coming off of it and stuff like that. And how it also, when it would became night and it would change over like that, that piece, I thought like those things were, I thought were really quite,
I think, clever. I read that it was the largest backdrop ever used in a film or something. There was something about that backdrop, like there was something significant about like the size or the complexity or something about that. I think it's on, I think I saw that somewhere on like IMDb on the trivia section.
Yeah, I was interested because I found myself looking at it a lot, and there was also like weird cloud formations. I'm like, is that supposed to be smoke or I don't know, but I thought that was pretty cool. Like, I thought that was a good way of like
The lights at the end. What was your take on the red and, it was red and green kind of, right? Like the lights that are flashing within, but it looked like the lights were coming from within like the interior of the apartment. I was very thrown off by that.
I'd assumed because they're clearly in the city. I just assumed it was like a location nearby, either like a restaurant or something, or some like a sign that was causing the lights.
I was trying to decide if it was like something, if it was supposed to be like in suggesting that the police were on their way and that it was like something to do with police lights. I was really thrown off because it then also felt like it was coming from the inside, which
I think it was just coming from meant to put you in the place, because now it's nighttime and you're in the city, so now places are putting their lights on, and it was a way of like, you know, clearly it was meant to increase the the tension, but it was
shining in night. I had a question for you. In 1948, that 911 didn't exist, so was opening a window and shooting three guns into the or three shots of your gun into the air, was that like the 911 version of 1948? Like
I thought that was pretty funny too, because it's also like you hear the crowd and like, oh, we need to call the cops. And I feel like if that happened today, it would not get that reaction. It's like, all right, we're gonna go away now. And
all three of them would have been sitting in that room for a long time.
It's like when you shoot a gun like that in the city, it's gonna be hard to pinpoint the exact location it came from.
Right. So, like, I know there's a phone. They used it earlier in the movie.
Yeah, I get it. I get it's like for dramatic effect, but I did think that too. I'm like, that seems.
And then he hurt himself on it.
I did love the final shot though, like of him sitting, you know, you see his back, and, you know, one's on the piano, the other one's like drinking. Like, I thought that was like, again, on a technical standpoint, the way it ended, I liked the framing. It's Hitchcock, of course. So, of course, like when it comes to, you know, framing scenes, that they're great. And I did like the way it ended on that final shot.
So obviously we don't have a couple of the things that we have seen in a few of the other films. Like, there was no mother, relationship that we see here. There's no like Hitchcock blonde that we're talking about here. There is they continue some of the stuff though that we've seen as far as like the audience knowing what's happening. Like we know the whodunit of it, and like trying so like having that information and going along for the ride, I guess, is something that we've seen here a little bit. Although it wasn't somebody that was like we saw in the 39 steps where it's somebody that's not guilty that's trying to get out of it, which I think is more of the Hitchcock theme. So we'll have to see. Like, I don't know if there was a lot of stuff here from a storytelling standpoint that was Hitchcockian. It was more so the camera work and some of the physical aspects of like the creation of the film, I think, that we get a little bit more of his signature on it. Did you pick up on anything else?
No, I didn't pick up on anything else.
So, all right. So I guess a lukewarm response for Rope from 1948 from us, which I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure if you were going to go for this or if you were going to be like me. I was worried that I was going to come on here and be like the negative Nancy. So
I think I definitely liked it more than you, but I wasn't I didn't like it as much as I was hoping I would.
So. Gotcha. So next time what we have is we're going to go 3 years into the future for 1951's Strangers on a Train. So I have never seen that one. It's going to be another first time watch for me. Dan has seen this, but about how long ago was it, do you think, Dan?
Oh, 13 years ago. I think the letterbox I can see it was 13 years ago.
So there we go. So not a first time watch, but a first time in a long time watch. So and also on the backdrop of watching three other Hitchcock films. So we're going to see where Strangers on a Train takes us. Dan, how can people keep in touch with you or share some opinions with you online?
You can check me out at Comic Concierge. I'm on all social media platforms, Blue Sky, Threads, TikTok. Hopefully going to be started doing more YouTube videos soon, so check that out, awesome. Comic Concierge on YouTube.
You can get a hold of me at Optimus Solo on most of the social media platforms, and you can get directly in contact with the show by searching out Cinema Geeks on the various platforms as well. Or if you want to get in touch with what else is going on in the Geekcast Radio Network, you can just search out geekcastradio.com and see all the other geeky things that the network puts out. So that does it for this episode. Tune in next time for another chance to listen to more Cinema Geeks.